You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 23 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 11th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your technology tour guides through topics that may be, hopefully, of some use to your particular ministry, whether you be a pastor, teacher, staff minister, or volunteer church worker. Whoever you are, we're happy you joined us today. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How's it going today?
Good. How are things in the land of 10,000 lakes?
Oh, we're happy out here in Minnesota. Okay. I was just reviewing some notes that I had from previous shows, and I noticed that we had talked about geocaching, and I forgot to give you an update on my geocaching adventures on vacation.
Oh, yeah.
We conquered South Dakota. We found 11 geocaches in South Dakota and also 10 within the state park. So that kind of harkens back to the educational uses of geocaching that we had talked about in a previous show. It's amazing that lots of people are catching on to this geocaching technology. In the state park where we stayed, they had virtual caches, which is where you go to a location and answer a question about that mm-hmm. location. So there was nothing physical to find.
More an educational experience, huh?
Exactly. We learned an incredible amount. Took us to some really beautiful spots we wouldn't have gone to in the state park. And just, again, pointing to that educational aspect. And
cool.
Encourage people to check it out.
Neat. Very neat. Mm-hmm. Well, this week we are in Saginaw, Michigan, doing some web streaming again for the Michigan District Convention. We're going to be testing out a few streaming services. One of the reasons that we're in Michigan this week is to kind of get a lay of the land for next summer's Synod Convention, which is in Saginaw, Michigan. So we wanted to scope out the landscape there and make sure that we are prepared to do that effectively. We had a huge viewership last year in New Ulm, and we're expecting an equally large viewership next year in Saginaw, so we want to make sure that we've got all of the details ironed out. So that's why we're in Saginaw, and we'll be trying out a couple of the streaming services that we talked about. I think it was two shows ago. Some of them are free. Right now, the Synod uses a paid service, but we're going to be exploring some of these free services to see if they can meet our needs and save ourselves some money in the process. So we're in beautiful Saginaw, Michigan. Sally, for our show discussion today, we're going to take the lead from one of our listeners and some of the feedback that we received from one of them. And who was that?
Yeah, we heard from Steve Mathwick. He's at St. John's Lutheran Church in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, and he was interested in learning more about blogs and how his congregation could make an effective use of blogs and the technology that they represent to enhance their church website. So he's kind of starting at ground zero, doesn't know a lot about what blogs are, and, you know, it's kind of a trendy thing or a word that you hear a lot, mm-hmm. but how can we use these effectively to enhance our ministry, I guess, is the gist of Steve's question for us.
Okay. Well, there's probably a couple of questions we should ask right off the bat. First of all, you know, what purpose do they serve? Do they have a place in ministry? Do they have a place in the church or the school? And then, you know, a very basic question is, what's the difference between a blog and a website? I think there's some confusion there. So let's talk a little bit about purpose. And the definition, I guess, of a blog, at least the one that I've worked with over the years now, is kind of a virtual online journal. It's more personal, you know, than a website. It's more personal than static information that you'd put up about your church or your ministries or your activities. It's a very dynamic thing, and it's, you know, it can be updated on a very regular basis. Is that your feel when you think of the word and the term blog?
Right, Martin. I agree with everything you said. I think one more interesting component about blogs that's maybe different than a website is that it allows for interaction with the readership of the blog. So
right, it's more of a social tool, sure.
Exactly. There's an aspect where the reader can comment and there can be back and forth discourse between the writer and his commenters on his postings in the blog. So a little bit more interactive, but still controlled by the owner of the blog. You know, someone can't go come along to your blog, introduce their own topic on the blog. They can only respond to things that you've written about on your blog.
Right. I guess a major difference between a website and a blog is that a blog really revolves around a person, an identity, a personality, you know, what's happening in a person's life or what's going on in their head, what they're thinking about, or around topics that they find of interest. So that would be another difference between a blog and a website. But there's probably some similarities too between a blog and a website.
Sure. Obviously, they're delivered via the internet. So, so you know, to someone who doesn't necessarily care about the differences or whatever, they're going to a web page, and in their mind, you know, it's a website that they're accessing. It just happens to be one that's used as a blog or in this.
And sometimes it's totally transparent. You don't know that you're actually visiting or viewing a blog site, because in many respects they look exactly like a website. I guess one of the differences, again, would be that a blog, you know, the newest article, it's based on articles and posts. Those articles typically flow to the top, so the newest article's on top, and then you scroll down or you look in an archive section for the other articles that have been posted.
Right, that whole chronological timeline thing is a big part of a blog. So typically you'll see the archive with, you know, dates so that you can search it that way.
Right. Good example of a website that is running on blog software is our own, wellstech.wells.net.
That's right. We're using WordPress, which is one of the softwares we wanted to point people to. WordPress is a free blogging tool that's out there. You can use it on their website, create your own blog and have them host it, or you can download the software and install it on your own web server and you know, customize your blog quite a bit. So WellsTech runs WordPress and functions very well for us. The most current show comes to the top, and we have an archive and a tag cloud and all those kind of things that are they're very common with blogs.
So WordPress is one. Let's talk about a few of the other ones, and these are all free, all open source. You can, if you really want to get high end, I suppose you can pay and, you know, get a subscription and get some premium services, but for, I think, ministry purposes and a lot of the folks that would be listening to this podcast, you know, the free services are just fine. We installed our own WordPress installation, but that's not necessary. There are a lot of online ones. Blogger.com, which is one that's owned by Google. TypePad is another one. And we'll put all the links to these in the show notes if you're interested. There are a couple others. Movable Type is one that's been around for a long time, and LiveJournal is another one. And even within our own web hosting program, right, Sally? There's a blogging feature.
That's right. It's very easy with the final web product to turn on a blog on any of your sites or subsites. And I actually have an example of that from our St. John's Sleepy Eye site that I wanted to, you know, give people a link to so they could see an example of a blog and in the final web program. Our teachers use it for their teacher updates. So I'll put a link to our pre-K kindergarten teacher updates in the show notes.
So you mentioned a use for teachers. As far as other uses for teachers, what kinds of things can teachers use blogs for?
Well, that's kind of wide open. That's an exciting area. Certainly, teachers can make use of it to do things like posting their resources and lesson plans, class updates, just like we're using it here in Sleepy Eye. Just keeping the parents up to date on what's going on in the class. It's very easy to sit down and type off a quick journal entry, basically, and it's going to float to the top, and parents will be able to access it. Students could also make use of blogging software, and we have some examples of that that I want to post links to. Things like sharing their schoolwork, collaborating on projects, or just journaling what's going on. I read about one advanced placement calculus class where the students share the responsibility. So each day a different student is responsible for taking notes and blogging those notes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and they're using some really cool features to do all their calculus symbols and things like that. So, you know, for you secondary ed people, maybe you can use some kind of blogging slant like that in your classroom. I know we interviewed Mr. Dale Witte from Winnebago Lutheran Academy about his music technology class a few weeks ago, and linked to his class blog where he's having the students post their music and comment on each other's music. So part of their classroom requirements was to go out and actually do this interactive commenting so that they have evaluated each other's music and, you know, taken the time to do that. So some really slick uses of blogs in the classroom. I also wanted to include in our show notes links to a couple of more sites. One is called supportblogging.com, and it's totally geared toward promoting the use of educational blogs. And one of the pages on this site is a link to, I don't know, I would say a million. I guess there's not a million, but a very lengthy list of links to school blogs. So if you're looking for examples, just peruse that list and start clicking in on a few of those, and you'll be quite impressed with different educational uses of blogs. Mm-hmm. Also wanted to mention a couple of books that are out there, one by David Warlick, Classroom Blogging, and another by Will Richardson that's called Blogs, Wikis, and Podcasts and Other Powerful Web Tools for the Classroom. So both of these are available, and I have Amazon links to share for those. I was able to check them both out of the library. So, you know, do some searching at your library or your library, you know, scope. For us, we can get to all the books in the state of Minnesota. So I think if you do some of that searching, you should be able to put your hands on these books and peruse them as well.
Sure, sure. I'm thinking for other church workers, there are probably other uses as well, rather than just in the classroom, and thinking specifically of pastors. There's all kinds of things that I'm sure occur to a pastor as they're doing sermon preparation, little insights, illustrations, maybe mini sermons even, that they would want to share that maybe don't make it into the sermon but are kind of adjunct to the message for that day. I think the key there is to make them interesting and intriguing. Make them short. Don't make them sermons themselves. You know, truly mini sermons. Blog posts are not meant to be, you know, long essays, but, you know, a paragraph or two, a quip or something like that that people can quickly read, and something that you don't feel that you have to craft every day or every week even, so that you're looking at this as more of a chore. It's just kind of, you know, thinking out loud almost. So it tends to be more informal, but it does need to be fairly regular. So if you want people to be listening to what you're saying, obviously you have to make it intriguing and interesting. And one of the ways to do that is to keep it short, but very very smart, you know, something that people are going to think, hey, I didn't think of that, or you know, I want to follow that, or I like the way he thinks, you know, those kinds of things. So there's lots of things that, you know, pastors, I think, could blog about. Youth leaders have a lot of things, too, as they're trying to connect with teens. They have the opportunity to do that because teens are online, and they do follow these types of things, and they do like to comment as well. So there's, you know, there's those things as well.
And I'm just thinking, you know, you talked about sermon offshoots or whatever.
Right.
I think, you know, a targeted blog just related to your Bible class study might be a good way to use a blog, where you're just following up and allowing that, you know, discussion. Each week you're going to post maybe three or four offshoots of your Bible class study, and people can comment. And,
yeah, just throw out a question or a topic and see what happens.
Keep it on their minds.
Right, yeah. A lot of people who start blogging kind of get frustrated initially because, hey, nobody's commenting. We felt that way when we started blogs here in the Synod office about 2.5 years ago. Said, hey, we're putting out all this stuff, but, you know, is anybody really reading it? Because we don't get many comments. And if you look at your stats, and we talked about stats last week, when we looked at stats, even though people weren't commenting, we recognized that people were visiting and reading. Just because you're not getting comments doesn't mean that you don't have an audience, or you don't have people that are following what you're saying or reading. So keep that in mind, and you know, as you move forward, you know, I'm sure you'll kind of develop a style, and if you really want to elicit feedback, those will come depending on the posts that you're putting up there.
So, Martin, are there different ways that people can blog? I mean, we've talked about some tools, but are there other things to make the blogging process easier, like the mechanics of it?
Oh, absolutely. With the technology of the day and kind of the Web 2.0 world that we live in, and we're going to talk more about that, I think, in a couple of weeks, there are almost every web tool that comes out has some kind of interface in it to allow you to post to one of these blogging sites. All of the ones that we mentioned have tools and little utilities that allow your browser to post blogs almost automatically. We talked about Jot a while ago. That was the service that you can basically make a phone call and it'll dictate your message. You could actually jot a message to your blog and it would automatically be posted to your blog site. There's a whole browser called Flock. I believe it's flock.com. I'll have to look that up. And I've used it off and on over the last couple of years. It's a browser based on Mozilla technology, so it's a Firefox offshoot. But basically, it's filled with tools that allow you to blog right from within the browser. So if you come across an article that you want to blog about or a site that you want to blog about, it's just a button click, and it automatically posts to your WordPress blog or your Blogger blog. Also, there are a bunch of Firefox and Internet Explorer plugins that essentially make it one click away to posting a blog. So if you want a blog, there are tools out there that allow you to do that almost seamlessly with your surfing or the online experience.
And I guess we can't really talk about blogs without talking a little bit about the fact that most all blogs come with a built-in RSS feed.
Mm-hmm.
And RSS is definitely a powerful tool. If you aren't using it, you need to learn more about it and start using it. But I think blogs is actually what made RSS so incredibly popular. When blogs took off, then people began understanding the power of RSS. When basically, it allows you to subscribe to these blogs and have the content come to you. And so that you can easily read the headlines of blogs and peruse a vast list of blogs and zero in on the things that you really want to spend your time on and read further on. And so your readers would also be able to subscribe to your blog in that way and get your new blog posts fed to them.
Kind of along the same line, Sally, we had the privilege of sitting down with Pastor Peter Schmidt of Bethlehem in Menominee Falls and Germantown, Wisconsin, who is using some similar technology to blogs to connect with his youth of his congregation. He's in charge of youth ministry there in Menominee Falls in Germantown in Wisconsin. And he uses a technology that's familiar to certainly many of our younger listeners, and that is Facebook. And it has similar blogging functions. And we talked to him a little bit about how he's using these online technologies like blogs, like social networks, like Facebook, how those are used in ministry context to connect with youth. So let's take a minute, listen to Pastor Peter Schmidt talk about Facebook and his youth ministry. Joining us today is Pastor Peter Schmidt from Bethlehem Lutheran in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. Good afternoon, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Tell us, first of all, a little bit about your congregation and your responsibilities there and a little bit about your youth group. I understand you are the pastor there in charge of youth ministry.
Yeah, my church is, Bethlehem Lutheran Church is about 1,600 total members, and of that number, 600 are either college age or younger than that.
Oh, wow.
And, before I came, Bethlehem was just being served by two pastors, and that slice of the congregation was just kind of being not overlooked, but not served as best they could. So mm-hmm. I was called to be Bethlehem's first third pastor and in charge of overseeing all the youth ministries. And, youth ministries are things like, we have about a dozen organizations with the two pioneer groups, our teen group, parents and tots, a recruitment team that tries to encourage eighth graders to go on to one of our area Lutheran high schools. So basically my job is to see that all those groups are doing their job and doing it smoothly.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been there?
I've been here for just under 3 years.
Okay, so enough time to develop some relationships, and I assume that that's a really important component of your job when you're dealing with youth. You really have to get to know them.
Definitely, and we're blessed to have a good, thriving area, grade school here at mm-hmm. Bethlehem, and I get to teach fifth grade as well as seventh and eighth grade catechism classes. So that's a good way to just get to know them before they get to their high school years.
Yeah, they can get used to you, feel comfortable with you, and then during those years of high school, which can be challenging for some kids, they've got a comfortable face and a comfortable voice that they can come to. Sure. Now, speaking of relationships, one of the reasons that we wanted to talk with you is we thought our listeners might be interested in basically a Web 2.0 app that you use pretty extensively. That's basically how we kind of uncovered, you know, what you were doing on the web called Facebook. So how do you use Facebook to help you connect with the youth of your congregation and maybe, I'm assuming, even beyond the youth of your congregation?
Yeah, actually, I personally use Facebook for two things. One is the work-related thing, like you were talking about with the youth, but also, you know, I use it personally with my family who's, you know, spread across the country. Hmm. And in case you don't know what Facebook is, it's basically what it is you set up a web page just all about yourself. You know, you put things that you like. You know, you can put your football teams or whatever things that you like. There's a, you can post videos, music videos or your own or whatever that you want. So it's, like I said, it's basically a web page about yourself. And
so everybody on Facebook does the same thing. So if you're joining Facebook, you get an account, and one of the first things that you're asked to do is set up your own profile. So everybody's got
correct.
A profile, right? Okay.
Correct. But I'll talk about that a little bit later. And you don't have to. You can put as much or as little on it
sure.
as you want. Like, for instance, my mom is on there, and she has very, very minimal stuff. And whereas my sister's page is very filled with stuff.
Right.
But in order to, and a security feature that is, in order to see my Facebook page, you have to be my Facebook friend. So let's say that one of my classmates from seminary gets on Facebook and sees that I'm there. He has to send me a message saying, hey, will you confirm me as a friend on Facebook? And once he does that, once I say, yes, he's my friend, and I can see his profile, he can see mine. But until that stage happens, you know, nobody can see anything more than just my name and picture.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is I got on this about beginning of this past school year, so about 9 months now, and we were finding that every single one of our college age members is on it, and almost all of our high school members are on it, and they're talking to each other, and we just thought this would be a good way to keep the teens informed as to what's going on here at Bethlehem. We never saw Facebook as, you know, the one silver bullet that's going to make, you know, great attendance at all of our activities, but just something to kind of supplement, you know, bulletin announcements, newsletter announcements about the teen group, and posters on a bulletin board.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest way that we use Facebook with our group is to set up events. Now, once you go on Facebook and you set up you become a member, you have the ability to create, you can create two things. You can create a group, or you can create an event. For instance, we've created at our church a group called Bethlehem Teen Group, and we encourage all of our graduating eighth graders and all of our teens in high school to, you know, just hop on and join the Bethlehem Teen Group. So that's one way that we do it. Another thing that we create is things called events. And let's say that, like this past May 4th, we had a mini golfing event. On Facebook, I can create that there's this going to be this event May 4th at whatever golf mini golf course, and the invitation is sent out to everybody in our teen group. And then they and it's not just something that gets sent out, but they're able to respond with a yes, no, or a maybe. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that, let's say that I send it out to 70-some teens, I'll probably get maybe, you know, 15 yeses, maybe 40 noes, they're out of town or just not interested or whatever, and then the rest maybes.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that maybe really means no, unless you do
yeah,
a little
right.
bit more.
That's what my kids tell me when I say maybe. That equates to them as a no.
Exactly. But, you know, instead of having 70-some people that we have to call, you know, physically, we just call all those maybes. Our teen leadership group will call them and, you know, try to get a more firm yes
sure.
or no from them.
Sure.
So it saves us a little bit of time there.
Mm-hmm.
So do the teens enjoy it that you're interacting in their space, basically? This is kind of their world, and you're a part of it. So I think that must be very cool for them.
Most of them, I guess. Not, you know, I don't try to put a guilt trip on people saying, hey, you got to make me your friend. But I would say about 80% of the teens have accepted me as their friend. You know, other ones, for whatever reason, their privacy or whatever they want, just don't want me to be their friend, and that's fine. But mm-hmm. I have had a lot of the parents of the ones who said yes saying, yeah, it's kind of nice that you're on there, and then I know that at least another pair of eyes is seeing what my teen is doing on there. Mm-hmm. Not that I use that to, you know, go behind people's backs and see what they're doing, but, you know, it is a nice way to...
Well, it's never a bad thing to be on the good side of the parents, too. So.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Have you run into any problems or concerns with using Facebook?
I guess the one concern that I had is, like, let's go back to that thing that I was talking about. If I'm setting up an event, I really want that to be really secure. You know, I don't want just anybody on the Internet to be able to see, hey, there's going to be a group of teens at such and such a place, such and such a time. Luckily, Facebook does have some good security things built into it. For instance, the Bethlehem teen group that I talked about before, if you went on Facebook right now and you searched, you would not find it because I turned that into what's called a secret group. There's three types of groups, and it also carries over to three types of events. You can have either a public group, a private group, or a secret group. A public group, anybody can see and anybody can join. A private group, anybody can see the group, but they can only join if they're approved. And a secret group is nobody can find it unless they're invited to join the group. And so that's what I've kind of chosen for security reasons, what our groups are. Let's see. You would ask what? No.
Any other problems or concerns, I guess? So security-wise, it sounds like it's pretty positive.
Yeah, pretty positive. But then, you know, some of the teens have told me that they've had a friend whose account has been hacked into by some outsider. So with that in mind, I keep whatever information that I post on there as vague and as general as I can. Mm-hmm. For instance, I won't say we're having a mini golf outing at, 2081 Appleton Avenue at 1 o'clock. But I will say, hey, remember that golf outing that was in the bulletin 2 weeks ago? That's coming up. So if they're kind of already know what's going on here at church or have heard about it once, I use it more as a reminder rather than give out all the information about the events that we're doing.
So do you have another primary communication tool for them? Is it the church bulletin, or do you have a church website in addition to the Facebook page?
Yeah, see, my thing with the website is if I say just look at the website, I would think that it would be pretty easy for somebody who would, you know, want not to do good things to people to just go look for a Bethlehem Lutheran website, Pastor
right.
Peter Schmidt, and would be able to find that pretty easily.
Uh-huh.
So we have a physical bulletin board in our church, and one panel is devoted just to teen activities. So that's where all the more specific information is going to be posted.
Okay. So how would someone get started if you were to give advice to other youth leaders across the synod and they wanted to explore using this kind of mechanism to, you know, for social networking and trying to create community amongst, you know, the youth, like-minded youth and their youth leader? What kind of advice would you give them? How would they get started?
I guess two ways. One way would just be to ask, you know, anybody in your congregation that is going to college. I mean, they could walk you through it. Everybody
okay,
in college
right.
knows how to do it.
Yeah, my kids are on it.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's really easy to do on your own. Just go to Facebook.com. And go from there. They'll ask for a name, birth date, and an email account. And again, one thing that I'll caution people, I mean, like I said, I use it personally too. So with my family and friends, I post, you know, little video clips of my kids, and I don't want just anybody to see that. So I hide as much of my personal information as possible. I mean, my friends, I figure they don't need to see my address. They don't need to see my cell phone number. They don't need to even see my home city. They already know those things, so why mm-hmm. would I put that on a website? So if it does ask me for a town that's going to be posted to everybody, I just pick a town that I don't really live in. Like on my Facebook, it says I live in Ames, Iowa.
And
I've never even been to Ames, Iowa. So so I guess that'd be the only thing that I'd caution. Just, you know, don't put any more information, specific information on there that you wouldn't want just anybody and everybody to see.
Right.
Are there any other ways that you're using technology to connect with your youth there at Bethlehem, Pastor?
A few other ways. We make some DVDs of our sermons, and then our teens edit those DVDs. So it's not just, you know, the raw video of one of us pastors preaching, but they'll put in, you know, the text as we're reading the text. They'll do that. And we're, like I said, we're training some of the teens to do that. And then we send these DVDs periodically to our out-of-town college students, as well as our members serving in the military. Another thing that we do here at Bethlehem is for our VBS registration, we do that on our church website. We also have paper brochures that, in case parents want to fill those out, but they do have the ability just to hop on our website and fill out a VBS registration. And then one other thing that we're just starting to look at is just started last week, one of our members of our teen leadership council was saying that her daughter, during one of our many snow days this past winter, would get text messages on her cell phone from her school saying there's no school today. And we're just kind of trying to look at into how would be a good cost-effective way of being able to do that, just having texts sent to our teens.
Neat.
Sounds very interesting. Maybe we'll have you back on when you get that all figured out. And
we'll see.
You can educate us.
All right.
Certainly sounds like a growing technology sector that ministries should be considering using, because ultimately the object of ministry is to be and meet with the people where they're at, and this is where our teens are at. I can vouch for that, as my kids, two of them are in college now, and they're still, you know, very active Facebook users. And I asked to be their friend, and they kind of looked at me a little bit odd. They did let me, you know, they did let me join their site, but I think this is a great way to connect with them. And you know, there's many, I think, advantages to doing it this way. And you know, I was just looking at Facebook the other day, and I I'm not an active Facebook user, although the Wells Tech Podcast has a group on Facebook for those of you that would like to check that out. I think you just search for Wells Tech. Is that right, Sally?
That's right. It's one of those public groups.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a bunch of other Wells groups as well. It's one called Wells Lutherans, Wells Theology, Wells Pastors. So there's a ton of them out there that, you know, these are where the people are. So, Sally, do you have other questions or thoughts on Facebook? Are you a Facebook user?
I am a Facebook user, yeah, and I've connected with some really neat people, including Pastor Schmidt. That's how I refound him after being a member of Bethlehem for a few years.
So. Yeah, and that is a good way to meet people from your past, too. I've had a couple people that I probably hadn't even thought about for 10, 15 years, you know, all of a sudden showing up on Facebook asking to be a friend. So neat application. And again, you have to kind of understand its positives and its negatives, and Peter, I think you illustrated both of those pretty well. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your thoughts with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Blessings on your ministry and your work there with your youth.
Thank you.
Sally, it was good that Pastor Schmidt was able to spend a little bit of time with us. I think he and others like him involved in youth ministry situations are really seeing the value of social ministry or social, I guess they could be called social ministry sites, social networks like Facebook.
That's right. There's definitely interest among the younger crowd for mm-hmm. social networking, and I think it's going to grow, and there are a lot of social networks out there. We just came across an article from Time about almost 5,000 social networks and how you can get very, very precise in your interest in things mm-hmm. And belong to different social networks that appeal to those different things. So definitely a Web 2.0 trend that's going to grow and I think develop over time, and it's good that Pastor Schmidt is harnessing that and making use of it for his ministry efforts there.
Right. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, do you have a pick this week?
Yes, I do. I came across a website that I wanted to share with everyone. It's called osalt.com. It looks like osalt.com, but it's intended to be opensourcealternatives.com is what the acronym is for, basically. And it's a place to search and find open source software that compares to well-known commercial software. So basically, you can go there and put in your favorite commercial software, and you're going to get a review of that, an explanation of what that software is, but then you're going to get a vast number of suggestions that are open source free software alternatives to that software. And you have the ability to read ratings and reviews that people have put on the site about the various software. Just a powerful place to search out alternatives to your software needs. And everything's categorized. They have business and communication categories, education, security, multimedia, and lots more. So I encourage you to check out OS Alternatives, OSALT.com, and see if you can find something new to use to replace some of your commercial software.
Right, great. We've talked about open source software in the past, and certainly there are some limitations to that, so you want to be careful, but this sounds like a great site to begin to explore what's available, and if it meets your needs, then by all means.
Mm-hmm.
My pick of the week, and Sally, we spend a lot of time talking about picks that are web-based, but sometimes when we take some of our software picks that are machine-based, they are specific to Windows and not cross-platform. They don't have a Mac companion. Well, for all you Mac users this week, my pick is Mac only, and that is a product called Delicious Library 2. Again, it's Mac only. In fact, it's for Leopard only. I don't think they have a Tiger version, so Leopard is the latest version of the Mac operating system. Very cool software. It's at delicious-monster.com. They just released version 2, and essentially it is a library that will allow you to catalog your books, movies, music, software, video games, anything that you've got, essentially with a barcode. You can put in this virtual library. Very cool interface, kind of like a bookshelf interface where, you know, they've got a bunch of shelves and then you see a picture, you know, of the asset that you've pushed into the system. One of the applications, I think, for this would be a church or especially a school library. Kind of a neat thing and kind of a fun thing and making going to the library a little bit more interesting. It's a Web 2.0 version of the card catalog, but it's very interactive and very easy to update. So what it does, obviously you need a Mac computer, and most Mac computers today carry these EyeSight cameras, either built in or you can, you know, get clip-ons, but you can use another webcam as well. But essentially you push a button, you hold up the barcode of the particular book or asset, you know, whether it's a DVD or whatever. It'll scan that barcode based on what it sees in the camera. It goes out to Amazon.com, and if it finds it, and in most cases it does, it downloads all the information, including the cover art, so what it looks like, a description of the asset, the current price of the asset, so you can do an inventory and see how much your library is worth in case there's damage to them or a book is lost and you need to charge a student back for them. There's a checkout process so that if somebody checks out the book or asset, you can track that. There is an interface that allows you to put all of this information up on the web, so you don't have to be sitting in front of that computer to be able to see what's in your library. You can go to the web and see if those resources are available. Just a wonderful implementation. They say right on the site that they have no intentions of putting this out in a Windows format. They're Mac lovers, and they don't see the reason they need to put it out in a Windows setting. There's all kinds of iPhone exports. It'll support however many books you've got. You can categorize it. You can, like I say, push it out to the web. It'll interface with iTunes. Just very cool technology that some librarians may enjoy using, especially if you have a Mac in your library, or may be worth getting one to put this stuff in. It's not free. It's $40. You can download it and try it for free just to make sure it works for your setting. But I think very, very cool technology and a good example of how software can work for you and kind of make it fun, especially I would think in a school setting, but I would think even a church library you'd have some application here. So Delicious Library 2, delicious-monster.com.
So I guess what you're trying to do is turn us all into Mac Lovers
no,
here.
No, no, don't.
Makes me want to go and
there.
Get one and try it out.
Don't go there.
Crossover.
But if you've, I use both. I've got a Mac at home and in the office here we use Windows. But there's, this is one of those products where, you know, it's very Mac-esque. It looks exactly like the Mac interface, and they've tried very hard to keep it that way. So if you are, if you use Macs, this is, and this is could be used at the home too. You know, it's not just specific to a library. So you could catalog your entire, you know, DVD inventory or almost anything that has a barcode. You can put it in here. Movies, music, books, everything. And it has a, one of the cool things is it has a an audio interface. So you could actually search your library based on the spoken word. So you just speak to your computer the name of the assets that you're looking for, and it'll do a search for it. Very cool.
Enough.
Sorry.
I don't think my budget can require it, can meet the needs.
That's
yet,
right. So. All right. So Delicious Library 2. Check it out.
Buzz.net
feature of the week, Sally, before we go any further with a Mac discussion. What are we featuring this week on Welsh.net?
You can see Welsh.net on a Mac or a PC.
That's right.
This is very, very platform.
It's cross-platform, yes.
Yeah. I'm going to take you today to the Welsh.net calendar of events. You can find that at Welsh.net/jump/calendar. And what you're going to find there is a listing of events happening across the Synod. Lots of different ways you can view it, monthly views or daily views, whatever. And there's easy links there to submit your event as well. So if you want to know when concerts are coming up or various conventions or pastors meetings or things like that, you're going to find that on the calendar of events. And of course, it's only as good as the information that's submitted to us. So if you know of events that would be appropriate for this calendar, please, we encourage you to use the submit button there and get your events added to the calendar. Great resource for all us Wells members.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Anything to promote this week, Sally, coming up in the Wells world?
Actually, while I was out on the calendar, I noticed that this weekend, being Father's Day weekend, is kind of the kickoff weekend for Camp Philip. Camp Philip is a Wells camp that's located in Wautoma, Wisconsin. And if you aren't familiar with it, you really should find out more about it because it's just a wonderful place to spend some of your summertime. They typically kick off their summer events with Family Fest on Father's Day weekend. And that's just a great time for campfires and games and concerts, Sunday worship, which wouldn't be complete without Pastor Tom playing his accordion to accompany the music, and just a very special setting. One of the things they have at camp is low ropes and a high ropes course where you can mm-hmm. go out and do some really challenging things. I've watched my husband jump off a 30-foot pole before, and just all kinds of things that you maybe aren't sure that you can do, and a really exhilarating experience to take advantage of their ropes course. And that's available over Family Fest weekend as well.
So for you, it's exhilarating to watch your husband jump off the pole.
Exactly.
You can live vicariously through that.
I'm the videographer, and that's plenty for me.
Okay.
So, and once Family Fest is over, then they're kicked into gear with their summer camp offerings for kids, obviously. And this summer, their theme's going to be lights, camera, action. And I know that they have lots of room for more summer campers. My kids have participated and can't say enough good things about it. I think this is my oldest 5th summer to go for a week of summer camp, and he's just chomping at the bit to get there. So you can learn more on their website. It's at www.campphillip.com, and a great way to spend your summer.
Great, great. Who's talking to us this week? Community feedback.
We heard from a friend of ours, Pastor James Douglas. He's out in Pierre, South Dakota at Redeemer. And Pastor Douglas had listened to our video streaming conversation, which we had, what'd you say, 2 weeks ago on the show.
Right.
And followed up with a question related to his camera specifically. He doesn't have a FireWire port on his camera, so he was a little concerned that his camera might be too outdated to do video streaming. But what we wanted to point out is that you certainly can purchase converters, and there's many of them out on the market where you can take your RCA output and convert it to USB so that it would feed into your computer and do the video streaming. And I guess one thing that Pastor Douglas was concerned about was that going to slow down the process too much? You know, would it be a reasonable feed going through this conversion process? And the answer is absolutely you won't have any problems with that kind of a feed. That's actually what we use here in Sleepy Eye, and it works just fine for us. So, again, if you're looking for a solution, there's many of these converters out there. You might just Google something related to RCA converter or something like that, and you're going to come up with lots of options there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very good. Keep those comments and feedback coming. There are many ways to do that, Sally. How can our listeners get in touch with us?
Well, we have lots of ways, actually. The predominant one is that you want to visit our website, which is a blog. It's the Wells Tech website, wellstech.wells.net, and you can always leave a comment to any of our shows right there on the website. You can also email us your comments at wellstech@wells.net, or if you are so inclined, we'd love to hear your voice on our voicemail line. It's 414-375-2334, and we have other options on the website as well. So,
and don't forget about our Facebook page, right?
Oh, that's right. I wanted to mention Facebook because I was excited to go out to Facebook this week and see that our membership has grown up to 51 members now in our Facebook group. So there's a link on our website to the Facebook group, or if you're on Facebook and you go to groups, you can just search for Wells Tech and our group will come up. So we encourage you to join our Facebook group as well.
We need some kind of membership drive. Let's see if we can get that to 100. Huh?
That would be cool.
All right. All right. Great show, Sally. Thank you for joining us again. In a couple weeks, just a reminder, we will have Gail Potratz with us to talk about classroom technologies. So be sure to keep tuning in to listen to those topics as those come up. Let's close the show, as we always do, with our Wells featured musician. This week, we return to the music of Michael Schrader. From his album, A Witness, we listen to the song called Paradise. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do appreciate you tuning in each week. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, I know that you'll be there when the end comes, or the beginning of a me with you. And I know that you'll keep me when the end comes, faith in a promise paid by you. In the heart of a moment, in the blink of an eye, the day I'll be with you in paradise. There'll be no more sorrow, there'll be no more pain. Oh, when the end comes, only peace will reign. There'll be no more tears, they'll be wiped away. Oh, when the end comes, only love remains. In the heart of a moment, in the blink of an eye, be with you in paradise. Like the sinner who's nailed next to thee, and who was saved by your grace and his belief. You made a promise that you would save all who believe. I know that you'll be there when the end comes, or the beginning of a me with you. And I know that you'll keep me when the end comes, saved by love. part of a moment in the blink of an eye. The day I'll be with you.